This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 895 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. At least 12 Palestinians were killed in Israeli attacks on Gaza on Sunday, March 15th, including two boys, a pregnant woman, and a group of police officers. An Israeli strike on one of the last still-standing houses in the Nuseirat refugee camp in central Gaza killed four people, including a man, his wife, who was pregnant with twins, and their 10-year-old son. A 15-year-old child in a neighboring shelter was killed in the strike. Another neighbor told the Associated Press that, quote, "We were sleeping and got up to the strike of a missile. The strike was strong. There was no prior warning." Later in the day, an Israeli missile struck a police car in the nearby town of Zuweida, killing eight police officers. At least 14 others were wounded in the attack. Reporter Mustafa Musallam captured video in the aftermath of the strike, with crowds gathered around several bodies laying on the street next to the wreckage of the vehicle. On Tuesday, March 17th, an Israeli drone strike killed three Palestinians, including a 14-year-old child, Tamer Baraka, in the Mawasi area of Khan Yunis. As of Wednesday, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported that since the fraudulent ceasefire was agreed upon in October 2025, 677 Palestinians have been killed and more than 1,800 have been injured. A brutal sandstorm hit the Gaza Strip this past week, battering fragile tents and makeshift shelters. Reporter Mohammed Abu Salama captured footage of people bearing against the winds and sand, which turned the air bright orange. The lack of adequate shelter and infrastructure to protect people under such conditions remains a product of a deliberate Israeli policy, as Israel has sealed shut all but one of the crossings in and out of Gaza since the attacks on Iran began 3 weeks ago on February 28th. The United Nations Humanitarian Office stated this week that the sandstorm destroyed or damaged the shelters of more than 600 families. People continue to have difficulty accessing food due to interruptions to the entry of supplies and shortages of cooking gas, the UN added. The World Food Programme and other UN partners leading on food security warned that more than half of families in Gaza are burning trash to cook food. Despite efforts to reopen facilities, the UN office stated, quote, "Only two out of every five health service points are currently operating, most of them only partially." On March 15th, the World Health Organization collected nearly 50 intensive care unit beds that it had offloaded at the Kerem Shalom or Kerem Abu Salem crossing. The collection was delayed due to the Israeli authorities' suspension of humanitarian movements to Kerem Shalom last week. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated that, quote, "Since the reopening of Kerem Shalom, Israeli authorities have allowed only a few dozen trucks to enter Gaza through the end of last week, still falling short by about 30 trucks per day compared to the daily average permitted before the war with Iran." Included in the violations of the so-called ceasefire agreement are ongoing refusals by Israel of the stipulated amount of fuel entering Gaza. Only 14.8% of the agreed quantity of fuel is allowed to enter, Euromed states, quote, "resulting in the severe disruption of vital sectors, including hospitals, water and sanitation networks, relief services, and transportation." Moreover, Israel continues to use starvation as a weapon in its ongoing genocide against civilians in the Gaza Strip, the rights group says. Quote, "This policy depletes essential means of survival and forcibly drives displacement by tightly controlling the quantity and type of food and goods allowed into the enclave, as well as restricting humanitarian and commercial supplies, worsening the humanitarian crisis and risking renewed widespread famine. Israel is exploiting the international community's focus on the war it and the United States have launched on Iran to tighten the siege on the Gaza Strip and continue using starvation in a manner that deepens the humanitarian catastrophe and reinforces the destructive impact of the ongoing genocide against civilians, Euromed asserted. On Wednesday, the Gaza government media office stated that since the October 10th ceasefire, Israel has committed at least 2,073 military violations of the agreement, documented by Gaza authorities. Such violations include 750 incidents of gunfire, 87 incidents of military vehicle incursions into residential neighborhoods and areas, 973 incidents of shelling and targeting, and 263 incidents involving the demolition of homes and various buildings. Only 40% of the humanitarian aid trucks have entered, along with the fraction of fuel trucks. Additionally, the government media office stated that Israel has failed to adhere to the withdrawal lines inside Gaza. It has refused entry to infrastructure, repair materials, and heavy machinery for the civil defense teams to clear rubble and recover bodies. It has prevented the entry of medicine and medical equipment, and it has failed to allow the entry of tents, mobile homes, and shelter materials. Reporter Mahmoud Hamda captured that video showing the current scale of destruction in Gaza. Meanwhile, buried in an article published by the Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz disparaging the Hamas political party's assertion of governance in Gaza amid 2.5 years of Israel's genocide, it was revealed that amidst a continuing crisis of food insecurity, thousands of food parcels remain on the Israeli side of the Kerem Abu Salem or Kerem Shalom crossing and are being looted by Israelis. Haaretz reported that the parcels were left at the former Gaza Humanitarian Foundation's logistics compound at the crossing, which include dozens of tons of dry food and staples such as sugar, salt, and legumes. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israel is conducting what the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights calls mass expulsions of Palestinians, with the forcible displacement of more than 36,000 people over the last year as illegal settlement colonies expand and the political push to formally annex the West Bank is accelerating. Since the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran began, the situation has become worse, the commissioner's office stated in a report this week. Quote, Israeli security forces have continued to kill Palestinians with impunity, the UN says. Israeli security forces have launched daily raids across the West Bank, seized dozens of Palestinian homes for several hours or several days to use as interrogation centers, and detained at least 200 Palestinians, including for social media posts labeled as incitement or glorification of the enemy, the UN stated. Israeli authorities have tightened the already heavy discriminatory closures and movement restrictions across the West Bank, tearing communities apart and impeding Palestinians' access to healthcare, livelihoods, education, and basic services. Settler violence, which the report states is up 24% from the same time period last year, continues, quote, in a coordinated, strategic, and largely unchallenged manner, with Israeli authorities playing the central role in directing, participating in, or enabling this conduct. Israeli settlers are roaming free with complete impunity, often armed, forcing Palestinian family after Palestinian family off their lands. As a result, at least 9 Palestinian communities have been fully or partially displaced since February 28th, mostly in the northern Jordan Valley, the UN added. Settlers attacked several Palestinian villages this week, including in Hirbet Homsa on March 13th, where settlers handcuffed and beat 14 residents, according to the group Breaking the Silence. This attack came a day after settlers invaded the village at night and forced residents and International Protective Presence activists into a tent, where they were tied up and abused for about an hour. According to photojournalist Oren Ziv, writing in 972 magazine, quote, around 10 adults and 7 children were held inside the tent, according to witnesses. The attackers beat them with clubs, poured cold water on them, threatened them, and sexually assaulted one of the residents. 4 Palestinians and 2 international activists were later taken to a hospital in the nearby city of Tubas. According to 4 witnesses who spoke to 972, all of whom asked to remain anonymous for fear of reprisal, the attack began late at night and involved dozens of settlers. One witness, who was about 40 years old, said a large group arrived at the first house in the village around 1 a.m. I tried to run away, but they caught me, beat me, cut my hand with a knife, and tied my hands and feet with plastic zip ties, he told 972, showing the marks left on his arms and legs. They were all masked except for one. We recognized him. The attackers, armed with clubs and knives, forced the residents into a tent in the center of the community. They gathered us in one room, men, women, and small children, the witness said. No one was left outside. They threw us onto the concrete floor on top of one another. They tied the women too and kept beating us. According to the witness, some of the attackers spoke Arabic. They said, "Today we'll take your sheep, but next time we come, we'll burn the houses, kill the children, and rape the women." That's from Oren Ziv's report in 972 magazine. In a televised interview for CNN on Wednesday, 29-year-old Qusay Abu al-Kabash said the settlers bound him by his hands and legs and stripped him. Quote, "They cut my belt off with a knife, as well as my boxers. They zip-tied my penis, tightened it, and then dragged me all around the village. It was very, very painful. I thought they were going to kill me," he said. "I'm worried they'll come back, that they'll kill us in the middle of the night or burn our village like they said they would," he added. Also on March 13th, a pogrom was enacted against Palestinians in the village of Kusra. Masked settlers roamed between houses with weapons for hours before they attacked a home, smashed windows, and shot dead a man, Amir Mutasim, and wounded 3 others, according to Matan Golan, a photojournalist with the Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz. On March 14th, Israeli soldiers killed a couple and their 2 sons while they were driving in their car in the village of Tamun in the north. Ali Bani Oda, his wife Waad, and their sons Mohammed, 5 years old, and Othman, 7, were shot in the heads and upper bodies by undercover Israeli forces on their way back from a Ramadan shopping trip. Ali and Wad's 2 other children, 11-year-old Khalid and 8-year-old Mustafa, were wounded with shrapnel from the shootings while trying to protect their youngest brother, according to Mondo Weiss's Qassam Wadi. According to the Israeli border police, the special forces had been in Tamun to arrest wanted Palestinians when they came across the Bani Oda family's car, which allegedly, quote, accelerated towards the forces, which felt endangered and opened fire. The raiding Israeli force had entered the town earlier in the day undetected, Tamun's mayor Samir Bishara told Mondo Weiss, since the soldiers were undercover. Those are excerpts from Qassam Wadi's report in Mondo Weiss. Detailed analysis of the attack was reported by Defense for Children International Palestine, which said that Israelis continued to shoot the car for about 3 minutes, quote, after which the family's 2 older sons, 11-year-old Khaled and 8-year-old Mustafa, got out of the car and cried out for help. Israeli forces arrived on scene shortly after, physically assaulting the 2 boys and preventing paramedics from reaching the wounded family members still inside the car. After about 30 minutes, Israeli forces finally permitted paramedics to reach the family, and all 6 of them were transported to the Turkish governmental hospital in Tubas. Othman and Mohammed, along with their parents, were pronounced dead on arrival. Othman was shot in the face and also sustained shrapnel injuries to the head, neck, shoulders, and chest. Mohammed suffered shrapnel injuries to the face, head, left eye, neck, chest, and shoulders, according to the medical report issued by the hospital and by Palestine Red Crescent Society medical teams. Speaking to reporters, Khalid, the 11-year-old, said he had heard his mother crying and his father praying before they died. After the gunfire stopped, Israeli border police dragged him out of the wreckage, taunted him about the murders of his family, and attacked him. One of the Israelis said, "We killed dogs," he told Reuters. In a video, Khaled recounted what he said to the Israeli soldiers when he was being dragged outside by the soldiers. "Do you love your father and mother?" he said he asked an Israeli soldier, who replied, "Yes." "Then why did you kill my father and mother?" he asked. Quote, "Then he punched me in the face," Khaled says.
أنا سألت الجندي أنت بتحب أبوك وأمك؟ قالت لي نعم. قلت له طيب لا تقتل أبوي وأمي. قعد كم ضربني بوكس على وجهي.
On March 16th, just 2 days after the Bani Oda family massacre, Israeli soldiers shot and killed a 16-year-old child, Salim Fukaha, in the village of Sinjil, northeast of Ramallah. According to Defense for Children International Palestine, Israeli forces opened fire on Salim and 15-year-old Fathi al-Sahouri, who survived the attack, then prevented Palestine Red Crescent Society paramedics from reaching the boys for 2.5 hours. Israeli forces confiscated Salim's body, and therefore DCIP cannot confirm the number or nature of his injuries, the rights group stated. Paramedics brought Fathi to a hospital in Ramallah, where he is currently receiving treatment for a gunshot wound to the shoulder. The shooting took place in an area near the barrier established by Israeli forces about 1.5 years ago on land belonging to the village of Sinjil, isolating it from Route 60, which has led to escalating tensions in the area. This area frequently witnesses live fire by Israeli forces toward anyone suspected of being present nearby, without distinction, making it a dangerous zone that constantly threatens civilians' lives. Israeli forces have killed 7 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank in 2026, according to documentation collected by Defense for Children International Palestine. We've published many features in the last week, but we wanted to highlight "Everything Feels Blurry" by Noor Khalil Khattab, writing from Gaza. In a tent pitched on uneven ground in Deir Abalah, Layan Badouan, 9, sits on the floor with a notebook on her knees, Khattab writes. Quote, "The wind moves the tent's edges, and the sound of a surveillance drone in the sky is constant. Layan tries to write her full name. She stops at one letter, looks at me, then smiles shyly. I want to go back to my school. I miss the room where I used to study." Layan is originally from El Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City. She had completed the first grade when school ended with the outbreak of war in October 2023. Since then, classrooms are no longer classrooms, and school years no longer feel like years. Israel's genocide in Gaza has brought the education sector to an almost complete halt, leaving thousands of children out of classrooms or in temporary learning spaces that lack the most basic resources. For many families, the question is no longer about the quality of education, but whether there is any at all. Over these 2.5 years, everything changed. Homes were destroyed. Schools were closed or turned into shelters for displaced families. Others were bombed. And displacement became an oft-repeated routine. I met Layan on January 23rd in a tent set up on her uncle's land in Deir Abalah. She wore a pink hoodie, her favorite color, and held her notebook as if it were something precious. She told me she likes to study English so I can learn languages and know more about the world. But at an age when she should be reading fluently, Layan still struggles with words. She writes half a sentence and stops. She finds it difficult to read and write smoothly. Layan is not an exception. In my modest apartment in Deir Abalah, I met Abdulrahman Al-Attar and Tamim Muammar, both 13. They sat side by side, speaking as if they had grown used to telling their story. Before the war, Abdulrahman would wake up before 6 a.m., he said, and walk half an hour to school. He memorized the morning school broadcast and recited the anthem. He loves Arabic, reads poetry, and dreams of becoming a police officer like his father. Tamim also attended regular school. He loves math and engineering and remembers the schoolyard where he played football with friends. He hopes to become a surgeon. Today they study in a shelter called Badr School. The classroom is made of corrugated metal sheets, and in winter, rain leaks through the roof. Desks are worn out and chairs are broken. We study, But the notebook isn't clear. Everything feels blurry. When it rains, we can't finish the lesson and we have to go home, Tamim said, pointing to their heads. Tamim said, sometimes I get dizzy and forget a lot. Before the war, it wasn't like this. My eyes tear up and I feel foggy. They stopped going to school when war started. Displacement, fear, and internet outages made learning difficult. When nearby shelling is heard, Abdulrahman sits on the ground and covers his head. Tamim moves closer to his mom and falls silent. UNICEF, the UN Children's Agency, estimates that more than 90% of Gaza's schools require either full reconstruction or major rehabilitation to be functional again, and that most of Gaza's 658,000 school-aged children have had only limited face-to-face learning in 2 years. When I asked Leanne what she missed most, she did not say lessons or grades. I miss my room. When I first saw our house after we were displaced and it had been bombed, I cried a lot. I had a box under my bed full of letters and stories. I love reading stories and exploring languages and cultures. For these children, education is no longer a system or a curriculum. It has become a memory of a place or a sound without drones. Those are excerpts from Everything Feels Blurry by Noor Khalil Khattab, a journalist and writer and translator writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and reclamation across Palestine. Music teacher Ahmed Muin Abu Amsha visited with and accompanied a new girls' choir in Khan Yunis. He says that, quote, beautiful young voices, full of positive energy and hope. This is just the beginning for them, and they really need support. Music is still alive in Gaza, and in Khan Yunis there is amazing energy. Wishing them all the success. The song they sing is called Tiri Tiri Ya Sfura, or Fly Fly Little Bird. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.